From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. An hour of sounds from radio's golden age, coming to you from New York's Finger Lakes region. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open the hour with some comedy, as we have an episode of Our Miss Brooks. The series premiered on CBS Radio in 1948, and it ran on the network through early 1957, producing over 300 episodes. It starred Eve Arden as sarcastic high school English teacher Connie Brooks. The series was an instant hit on radio. In fact, during its first year on radio, it won 8 different awards, including 4 awards for Eve Arden and her performance. In 1952, Our Miss Brooks transitioned to television, where it was also an instant success. Most of the radio cast was featured in the TV version of Our Miss Brooks, the only exception being the actor portraying chemistry teacher Philip Boynton. Originally on radio, Boynton was portrayed by Jeff Chandler. On the TV series, he was portrayed by Robert Rockwell. Rockwell ultimately replaced Chandler on the radio series as well. Such will be the case with this episode from later in the series run. Episode 303 in the series, originally broadcast on CBS Radio, August 21st of 1955. Its title, Who's Going Where? Classic comedy from Our Miss Brooks on the Upstate Radio Theater.
Now, Anacin, the tablets thousands of physicians and dentists recommend for fast relief of pain of headache, neuritis, neuralgia, and Bisodol Mints, that quickly rid stomach of gastric distress, present Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks Transcribed. But first, believe anything you like about what this or that way to relieve pain of headache, neuritis, or neuralgia will do for you. But there is one important fact you can't get away from, and that is thousands of users of Anacin have been introduced to this remarkable product through their own physicians or dentists. These people know how incredibly fast and effectively Anacin acts to relieve pain. Anacin is like a doctor's prescription. That is, Anacin contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients in easy-to-take tablet form. Next time you suffer from the pain of a headache, neuritis, or neuralgia, don't wait for relief. Try Anacin. You'll be delighted with these tablets' incredibly fast action. Try Anacin on this guarantee. If the first few Anacin tablets do not give you all the relief you want as fast as you want it, return the unused portion and your money will be refunded. All drug counters have Anacin in handy boxes of 12 and 30 tablets and economical family-sized bottles of 50 and 100. I'll repeat the name for you, Anacin, A-N-A-C-I-N. Well, if persistence alone can earn a high grade, you've got to give our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, an A for effort. It's taken almost 6 years, but this weekend she arranged to have Mr. Boynton, Madison's shy biology teacher, all to herself.
Yes, indeed. This time I absolutely put my foot down. It was just Mr. Boynton and me and 500 delegates to the teachers' convention. You see, over the past weekend, a special meeting was held in Evanston to help celebrate American Education Week. I had persuaded Mr. Conklin, our beloved principal, to send me, along with Mr. Boynton, as Madison's representatives. And Friday morning, my landlady came into my bedroom just as I finished packing for the trip.
You know, Connie, it looks just like cowhide.
I know, I haven't put on my makeup yet. Oh, you mean the valise. It is nice, isn't it? I borrowed it from Mrs. Rapp down the street.
Have you got everything packed, Connie?
I think so. Let's see. The nightie Harriet Conklin loaned me is in, and Mrs. Conklin's negligee, that's in. Your nylon stockings are in. Yes, I've got my things all packed.
Good.
And just wait till you see the new suit I'm wearing for the occasion. Of course, I won't be able to put that on until 5:15 today.
Why not, Connie?
Tilly Eberhardt doesn't get home from work until then.
You're terribly excited about this weekend trip, aren't you, dear?
Oh, of course, Mrs. Davis. This is quite an important convention. I'll get an opportunity to exchange ideas and opinions with other people in my line of work. I'll get an opportunity to see what's being accomplished at other schools.
What else will you get, Connie?
I'll get all my expenses paid and a whack at Mr. Boynton.
What? that will be nice. You and Mr. Boynton seeing strange places and strange faces together.
The strange places are all right, but the strange faces can go to the races.
There's one thing that puzzles me, Connie. Knowing your relationship with Mr. Conklin, how did he happen to choose you as a delegate?
Well, it's very simple, Mrs. Davis. Remember 2 weeks ago, Mr. Conklin got himself a new gray flannel suit?
Yes, indeed. His wife Martha told me he spent a small fortune on it.
I'm glad it was a small fortune. I spilled a small bottle of ink on it Monday.
You didn't.
He now has gray flannel pants and a very sporty blue jacket. Anyway, on Tuesday, he left his wristwatch on his desk, and I accidentally brushed it to the floor while I was picking up some papers. Then when I bent down to get it, I broke the crystal.
But a crystal is easily repaired.
Not when you break it by putting your heel through the back of the watch.
But, Connie, I don't understand. Why did Mr. Conklin pick you for the convention this weekend?
Well, I was just getting to that, Mrs. Davis. You see, Mr. Conklin's buying a new pair of glasses this morning, and he wants to give them a 3-day head start.
Sounds logical. Well, I know another English teacher at Madison who'll be mighty disappointed that she's not going on this trip.
You mean Miss Enright?
I do. She's almost as sweet on Mr. Boynton as you are. And this weekend trip would be a wonderful opportunity for her to cut you out with him.
Please, Mrs. Davis, I just got up. Why talk about nightmares? No more pencils, no more books, no more...
Wait for me, Miss Brooks.
Well, Walter Denton, why didn't you pick me up this morning? You know my car's in the repair shop.
So's mine. Yesterday when I started for home, it happened.
What happened?
As soon as I stepped on the starter, the exhaust pipe blew the rest of the car into Hershey's Meat Market.
Well, that's awful, Walter.
Yeah, anyway, I'm glad I caught you before you dropped into Mr. Boynton's biology lab.
What made you think I was going to drop into the biology lab?
Yo, please, Miss Brooks, it's too early in the morning for quips. Yeah, what I meant was I thought I could save you from a big disappointment.
Oh, that's all right. I'm used to him by now. I mean, what kind of disappointment?
Mr. Boynton isn't in school. What's more, he isn't coming to school today.
What? But we're supposed to leave from here for the convention.
Yeah, I know it, Miss Brooks, and I know how devastated you'll be by the news, but Mr. Boynton won't be able to go to the convention. He's sick in bed.
Sick in bed? How do you know?
Harriet told me. He called in a little while ago and left the message with one of the teachers.
But how can I leave town if Mr. Boynton is sick? He has no more relatives in this part of the world than I have. Who'll take care of him?
Let me put your mind completely at ease, Miss Brooks. Harriet and I can run errands for Mr. Boynton. Besides, I'm sure Miss Enright will be glad to nurse him back to health.
Walter, you couldn't have put my mind more at ease if you'd told me my train was going to be bombed.
You're not exactly smitten with Miss Enright, are you, Miss Brooks?
Well, frankly, Walter, there isn't a lot of affection squandered between us.
Well, she always speaks highly of you, Miss Brooks. Why, just the other day, Miss Enright said the only reason she can't see a romantic attachment between Mr. Boynton and yourself is because of the difference in your ages.
Miss Enright said that?
Sure. Let's see now, what were her exact words? Oh, yeah, I remember. She said that in her opinion, Mr. Boynton was definitely old enough to be your kid brother.
Oh, she did she? Well, that makes my next step quite apparent. If you'll excuse me, Walter, I'm going right over to the principal's office.
What for?
I've got to see a man about a cat.
Come in.
Good morning, Mr. Conklin.
Don't come any closer, Miss Brooks.
But, sir,
If you take one more step, I'll call for help.
What in the world are you talking about, Mr. Conklin?
I've got my new glasses on, Miss Brooks, and I mean to protect them with my life.
Mr. Conklin, your glasses are reposing firmly on your nose, and I'm nowhere near you.
That is how it always starts. You weren't near me when you spilled that ink on my flannel suit, either. Or when you smashed my watch. Or last month when you dropped the typewriter on my toes. Well, last week when you closed the office door on my nose.
Oh, I meant to ask you about that, Mr. Conklin. Was that door ever fixed?
You will be pleased to know, I'm sure, that thanks to your valiant efforts, I have become one of the poorest accident insurance risks in this part of the state. I won't draw an easy breath until you're on the train this afternoon. I presume you're packed and ready to go.
Yes, sir, and I'm really looking forward to it. This is the first convention I've attended since I represented Gordon High School 6 years ago. That was a lot of fun.
Well, you are not going to this convention to have fun, Miss Brooks. As Madison's standard bearer, our school will be judged by your actions. Always remember that.
Oh, I will, Mr. Conklin. You can depend on me, sir. I won't get myself thrown into jail this time.
Jail? You mean you were thrown into jail at your last convention?
Oh, for the most absurd reason, Mr. Conklin. Can you imagine being locked up for riding around on a motorcycle?
Well, that's hardly a jail offense.
That's exactly what I told the policeman. Besides, he wasn't using it at the time anyway.
You took a policeman's motorcycle?
It was just a lark, sir. There was absolutely no reason for them to put that picture in the paper.
What picture?
A picture of me holding up a burlesque queen in the drunk tank.
Miss Brooks, you can start unpacking at any time. You are not going to the convention.
Not going? But, Mr. Conklin, think of your new glasses.
My glasses will have to live dangerously like the rest of my person.
But if you don't send me, sir, who will you send?
Well, I haven't given it any thought. Have you any suggestions?
I haven't given it any thought either, Miss Enright.
Miss Enright might be just the person. She has poise, bearing. Do you think she'll relish the idea of going?
Believe me, Mr. Conklin, when you tell her about it, she'll be so happy she'll clap her paws in glee. Now, if you'll excuse me, sir, I'll get to my classroom.
Very well, Miss Brooks. Goose
piss. Thanks a lot.
Well, good morning, Miss Brooks.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Boynton. Wait till you hear the news. I was just in Mr. Conklin's office. Mr. Boynton, what are you doing up? Go right home and get back into bed at once.
Bed? What for? I'm not sick.
You're not?
No, I never felt better in my life.
What a revolting development this is. Walter told me that Harriet said you were sick in bed.
Harriet? Well, I didn't talk to Harriet. When I phoned the school this morning, I thought I was going to be delayed at the biology supply house. So I left that message with one of the teachers.
What teacher?
Miss Enright.
I should have said which teacher. And she's a witch teacher if I ever saw
Do you suppose she could have confused the words delayed with laid up?
Oh, there's no confusion at all. This is the result of careful calculations. Miss Enright knew that Harriet would tell Walter. Also, that Walter would, if he saw me, and that's customary, he'd almost be sure to, tell me. And then knowing what she would do, or thinking she knew what I would do, she told Harriet what I later heard from Walter. And then I did what she thought I'd do.
Look, are you all right? Why are you speaking in such jerky sentences?
There's a very good reason, Mr. Boynton. I have just been completely taken in by a very jerky teacher.
Friends, if you suffer from acid indigestion, I hope you didn't miss reading this wonderful news. A headline that says, New Mints, Medically Proven, Quickly Rid Stomach of Gastric Distress. That headline is talking about new Bisodol Mints. Doctors recommend Bisodol Mints because the Bisodol medication acts at once to make painful acid harmless and give you fast, five-way relief. 1. Speeds relief from gas. 2. Sweetens your breath. 3. Gives complete, longer-lasting relief than baking soda. 4. Relieves stomach upset from too much eating, drinking, smoking. 5. Lets you sleep when acid indigestion strikes at night. So don't suffer acid indigestion, heartburn, or gastric distress from excess acidity. Remember, new mints, medically proven, quickly rid stomach of gastric distress. And remember the name, Bisodol Mints. B-I-S-O-D-O-L. Get Bisodol Mints for fast relief.
Well, when we sat down to lunch in the school cafeteria, I told Mr. Boynton that I suspected Miss Enright of deliberately saying he was ill so that I would withdraw and she could go in my place. At first, he refused to believe it of her, but finally his sense of justice was so completely outraged that he seemed beside himself with fury, and he violently shouted,
"Maybe it was all a misunderstanding." Why should Miss Enright think you'd stay home from the convention even if I was sick in bed?
Because I would, that's why. Somebody would have to take care of you, get your medicine, and fix your meals, and see that you were made comfortable.
Miss Brooks, may I remind you that I'm not sick in bed?
Oh, I know that, Mr. Boynton.
Then would you mind not taking my pulse? I need this hand to finish my wax beans.
I still say that when people haven't any relatives in the place, it's up to the people who think something of people to do something for the people they think something of. Maybe I should teach Spanish.
I know you're disappointed about not attending the convention, Miss Brooks, but if you have any suggestions you'd like me to put before the meeting...
There's only one suggestion I'm worried about, and that'll come from Miss Enright to you.
Say, that's funny.
What?
You're mentioning Miss Enright. She's heading for this table now. Well, speak of the devil.
It's just the way she's wearing her hair. Uh-oh, she's spotted us.
Oh, hello, Miss Brooks. Mr. Boynton, why aren't you home in bed?
His sheets caught on fire.
You know yourself, Miss Enright, that I only phoned to say that I might be delayed getting to school.
Delayed? Oh, I thought you said laid up.
You did? Now, you see, Miss Brooks, it was a misunderstanding.
Oh, of course. Like the one Custer had with those red chaps.
Oh, now, don't be a bad loser, darling. Not that you are, really. I understand that you personally recommended me to Mr. Conklin for the position of second delegate for Madison High.
Oh, you did that, Miss Brooks?
I wish my mother had quit after my two older brothers were born.
Do you mind if I join you at this table? The cafeteria is quite crowded now.
Not as crowded as this table right now.
Sit down, Miss Enright. Oh, I see you have your own sandwich. Now, can I get you some water or a napkin or something?
Oh, go ahead, Diamond Jim. Bring her a toothpick, too.
I'd love some water, please, Mr. Boynton.
Oh, very well. I'll get some for all of us. Oh, I'm a great boy for water.
He's a great boy for a lot of things. Well, you'll be happy to know, darling, that Mr. Conklin told me of my selection as second delegate early in the day. That's why I was able to get home during a free period, pack a valise, and put on my new fall traveling suit. Do you like it?
It all depends how far you travel. Look, Miss Enright, we both know that your going to the convention is my fault, but we also know that my not going is your fault. Do I make myself clear?
To me, yes. But I can't help wondering how much of you gets across to your pupils. Well, that's the wrong attitude, though, isn't it? Let's not spoil Mr. Boynton's luncheon with a lot of female bickering.
You're right, Miss Enright. I might as well be a good sport about it. All's fair in you-know-what and war, I guess.
Well, here we are, ladies. Here's some good old H2O.
Greatest thing since water. Sit down, Mr. Boynton.
Well, I brought some coffee for us, too.
Oh, that was very considerate, Mr. Boynton. Tell me, do you think this suit I'm wearing is all right for our train trip today?
Well, yes, Miss Enright, it looks fine. It's a very provocative shade of green. Don't you think so, Miss Brooks?
In my present mood, it's puzzling. I can't tell where her suit leaves off and my face begins. Actually, Miss Enright, it is an interesting shade of green. Who knows? You may blend in with your Pullman chair so well, Mr. Boynton won't be able to find you.
Is that what you call being a good sport, Miss Brooks?
Sorry. Let's be gay, shall we? Drink up, Mr. Boynton. We'll knock that water cooler silly.
I've had plenty, thanks. I'm working on this beef stew right now. If you ladies will excuse me, I'm not much for conversation while I'm eating.
Of course, Mr. Boynton. Bon voyage. Tell me, Miss Enright, what other clothes are you taking on the trip?
Oh, just my two good dresses. As a matter of fact, they're the only two I'd wear out of the house.
But I thought you had quite an extensive wardrobe.
Oh, yes, I did. But I gave loads of last year's stuff to charity. I feel the poor have to live, too.
What a liberal viewpoint. I'm sorry, Miss Enright. I'd really like to let bygones be bygones. I'm going to get myself a little dessert now. May I bring you something?
Well, I could do with a piece of pie.
Oh, I'd be happy to do you with a piece of pie. I'll pick out something real nice.
Where are you going, Miss Brooks? Can I get something for you?
You keep bucking that beef. You're only yards away from a first down. I'll be back in the jiffy.
Oh, don't make it anything too rich, darling.
Leave it to me, darling. I'll fix you up fine.
Hi, Miss Brooks. I was happy to see that Mr. Boynton wasn't sick enough to miss school today.
He's not sick at all, Harriet. It was just a plot to get me to volunteer to stay home so Miss Enright could go to the convention in my place. I suggested her to Mr. Conklin myself.
And he took your suggestion?
Hook, line, and stinker. A sinker. But I've got an idea that may still turn the tables. I'm going to get Miss Enright a nice piece of pie.
A piece of pie? Because she played a dirty trick on you?
Exactly. Let's see now, what goes poorest with a green dress?
With a green... Oh, I get it. Miss Brooks, you're going to present Miss Enright with the pie, but in several places.
Why, Harriet Conklin, what an outrageous thought. I'll just take this coconut cream pie, I believe.
How about taking this piece, too?
Both of them?
Sure. Then you can lose your balance easier. And as you let her have it, you can sing White Christmas.
You have an extremely poetic mind. Oh, Harriet, there's no one at this counter to punch my food check. Will you please get it done for me? I'll pick it up on my way out.
Oh, sure, Miss Brooks. You go right ahead.
Thanks, dear.
Don't mention it. Happy landing on.
I hope I wasn't too long. I brought some pie back for both of you.
Oh, that was very thoughtful, Miss Brooks. Oh, looks delicious.
Oh, yes, it does. I'll pass Mr. Boynton's piece over to him, Miss Brooks.
Oh, I think I can manage.
Oh, come on. Let me have it.
Well, if you insist. Oh, I must have tripped.
How could you be so clumsy?
Oh, my goodness. The pie's all over your new suit.
Oh, dear. Well, not quite all over it, Mr. Boynton. Most of it splattered on the coat. The skirt's not touched, thank goodness.
That's what I get for not keeping my head down.
I'll just dip a napkin in this water. Maybe we can get some of that goo off your coat.
Oh, good.
Oh, here, let me try.
Now watch out for the coffee cup. Oh! Oh, no! All over my skirt.
That's what I call teamwork.
I'm terribly sorry, Miss Enright.
My new suit is completely ruined. First pie on the coat and then coffee on the skirt.
It's like I always say, what good's a piece of pie without a cup of coffee?
Your alleged humor leaves me cold at this point, Miss Brooks. It's a good thing I had the foresight to pack my other dresses and leave them in my gym locker.
No, it is indeed, Miss Enright. You'd hardly have time to get new clothes this afternoon. The train leaves at 5:45.
Well, accidents will happen. I apologize again, Miss Enright. And now, if you'll both excuse me, I've got to practice a bit.
Practice?
Yes, my work on the parallel bars has been very vertical.
Armis Brooks will return in a moment. Yes, you can help keep America beautiful. You can, with scarcely any effort at all, join the growing ranks of Americans who are making clean streets and highways their own business. Apart from the aesthetic value of beautiful streets and highways, unlittered and minus the all-too-familiar collection of tin cans, broken bottles, and similar debris, there's another consideration. Litter not only is unsightly, it's dangerous. A sharp, ragged edge of a can can cause a blowout. So can a broken piece of glass. Blowouts can cause death, and often have. If you have been among the thoughtless many who litter our roads, park sides, picnic sites, and open highways, give this matter serious thought now and help America mend its ways. Keep in mind that many states have already instituted heavy fines for littering, some in three figures, and more states are getting tough on litterers every month. It's going to be as expensive to get caught littering as speeding. In many states, it's more costly. Good citizenship demands it. Common sense demands it. Safety demands it. Help make ours a litter-free country. Help in every way you can.
Well, at lunch, I had done my best to prevent Miss Enright from attending the teachers' convention with Mr. Boynton. However, to my disappointment, I discovered one ruined dress doesn't mean a missed convention, at least not when die-hard Daisy happened to have the rest of her clothes packed and waiting in her gym locker. Later that afternoon, I received an urgent request to report to our principal's office. You sent for me, Mr. Conklin?
Yes, Miss Brooks, I did. I have just spoken with Miss Enright. She, it appears, was foolhardy enough to have lunch with you.
We did share the same table, but...
Fortunately, she escaped without any serious bodily injury. However, she has been forced to withdraw as Madison's second delegate to the teachers' convention in Evanston.
You mean she's not able to go?
Miss Brooks, when Miss Enright informed me that you had peppered her garments with a slab of coconut cream pie, it didn't surprise me in the least. But there's one thing that does puzzle me.
What's that, Mr. Conklin?
Well, if it isn't revealing too much of a trade secret, Miss Brooks, would you kindly tell me how you managed to plop a second piece of cream pie on the dresses packed inside her valise, which was inside her locker?
I guess when I get clumsy, I just go hog wild.
Well, until they infringe upon school operations, personal rivalries on the faculty are not my concern. However, there are two train tickets available for this trip.
I know it. Yes, sir. Two tickets.
And there are two delegates expected to the convention.
That's right. Two delegates expected. Two of them.
As you know, Mr. Boynton is one of the delegates. All we need now is another one.
You're right, Mr. Conklin. You're so right. You're the rightest thing since the Wright brothers. Just one more delegate's all we need.
Yeah, Miss Brooks.
Yes, Mr. Conklin?
Get off my desk. You're not going. I have just made my selection for delegate number two.
Who?
Me.
You?
None other. Not only will the trip do me a world of good, it will reflect prestige and credit upon Madison High as well. However, I don't want you to feel completely out of things, Miss Brooks.
So?
So I want you to type up these notes for me. They contain some remarks I will make to the convention. Now, toddle along, Miss Brooks.
Yes, sir. Oh, Mr. Conklin?
Yes?
I realize it's quite late, but how would you like to be my guest for a little lunch?
Not today, thank you. But don't be discouraged. It was a nice try. Good day, Lucrezia.
Goodbye, sir. Don't be discouraged, he says. Of all things to happen to a person.
Well, Miss Brooks, you must be upset today. You're talking to yourself.
I know. I'm a very good listener. Oh, it's you, Mr. Boynton.
Yes. I'm going in to talk to Mr. Conklin for a moment.
Mr. Conklin? Are you in trouble?
Oh, not at all. I'd rather not mention why I'm seeing him until after the interview. But if you'll wait right here, Miss Brooks, I think I'll have a pleasant surprise for you when I come out of his office.
Surprise?
Yes. Now wait right by that fire hose on the wall. I'll just be a few minutes.
Don't worry, Mr. Boynton. Unless the hose catches on fire, I'll be here.
Oh, I'm glad you waited for me, Miss Brooks.
This hose is doubled over exactly 62 and a half times. Now, what's the surprise?
Well, I knew how anxious you were to make this trip to Evanston, so when Miss Enright withdrew, I determined to prevail upon Mr. Conklin to let you go as originally planned.
But there are only two tickets available, and Mr. Conklin's using one of them himself.
I know that, Miss Brooks, but you're going anyhow.
I am?
Yes. I turned my ticket back to Mr. Conklin.
What?
Of course, he was a little timorous at first, but when I pointed out how helpful you could be to him, taking notes and typing and whatnot, he agreed to have you accompany him to the convention.
But what about you, Mr. Boynton?
Oh, don't worry about me. I'll be busy as a bee over the weekend. I'll probably go on a shopping tour with Miss Enright.
You really must excuse me, Mr. Boynton. This is the only traveling dress I own, and I've got to fix it up right away.
Fix it up? What's wrong with it?
That's obvious. It hasn't any coconut cream pie on it.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden transcribed, was produced and directed by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis, with the music of Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Conklin was played by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Bob Rockwell, Gloria McMillan, and Mary Jane Croft. Be sure to be with us next week for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Our Miss Brooks, Eve Arden, our star in Who's Going Where, that CBS broadcast from August 21st, 1955. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the program, the email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. Once again, that's qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And if you'd like more information about the radio theater, including detailed show playlists, or if you want to stream this and previous episodes in the series again, then please visit the blog and website at qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. Again, that's qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. This is show number 1709. We'll conclude the hour with a lesser-known police drama from the Golden Age of Radio called Police Blotter. I don't know much about this series, and not very many episodes of the series survive in old-time radio collections. The series aired during the mid-1950s, circa 1956, and the shows probably originally aired on the Mutual Broadcasting System, but the copies that I have in my library are Armed Forces Radio re-airings. Actually, by this point, Armed Forces Radio had transitioned to the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service, AFRTS, today known as AFN, Armed Forces Network. This broadcast, as I said, from sometime in 1956, with Bill Zuckert starring in the lead role. This is Homicide by Hurricane.
Tonight, Police Blotter, starring Bill Zuckert as Sergeant Brad Peters.
Name, Harry Dennis.
Address,
543 Larson Street.
Charge, suspicion of murder.
The heritage that you and I share as Americans has been given to us by many great men. One of these was Patrick Henry. He was a very lazy youngster, preferring to hunt or fish rather than go to school. But as he grew older, he developed an interest in law. This, together with a marvelous gift for oratory, led to his becoming a famous lawyer, and later helped him serve several terms as governor of Virginia. In 1775, with the American Revolution at a critical stage, Patrick Henry made his famous speech, ending with the immortal words, "I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death." Patrick Henry's words have rung through the ages. They are part of your American heritage.
Police Blotter. Authentic dramas of police work and the constant battle that goes on night and day against crime. Homicide by Hurricane on Police Blotter.
I'm Brad Peters, Sergeant Homicide. Been inside a police station. Phone rings. It might be anything from disturbing the peace to murder. Whatever or whoever it is, rich or poor, innocent or guilty, sooner or later I get to know them all. ...9 a.m. The call came in from Jonas Airport on the bay side of the precinct. Small field for private planes. Man named Costa, working on experimental plane, was found dead in the wind tunnel.
I've been waiting for you. Where you been?
Just getting out here, Mr.
Dennis, Harry Dennis. I told Ben to stay away from that wind tunnel. Told him a dozen times if I told him once. But he had his own ideas.
That it up ahead in that hangar?
Yeah.
You're the one called the police?
Yeah, that's right. I got here at 8 this morning, same as usual. I waited for Ben and he didn't show up. I began to wonder. Finally, I looked in the wind tunnel.
Why there?
Because that's where I left him last night. Costa and I are working on an experimental plane, a flying platform kind of gadget.
Uh-huh.
We were making wind tunnel tests. But last night at midnight, I had had it. I told Ben the project was a flop and why throw good money after bad?
You were partners?
Up until last night.
How did the argument end?
What? What argument?
Dissolving a partnership usually means an argument.
Not with Ben and me. We've been friends for years. I just threw in the sponge, that's all. Look, why do you guys always figure there had to be an argument?
Yeah, it's just force of habit, Mr. Dennis. Never mind, let's see the body. I saw it, but there wasn't much to see. It was all chewed up. That's a tough way to die, huh?
Yeah, poor Ben. You see how a wind tunnel is, Sergeant? The air is sucked in through that opening at the far end.
Uh-huh.
These two giant propellers up here build up the airspeed. Over here, this is where we set up the airplane model. It's suspended on this platform. Wires are used to test stability, turbulence factors, and so on.
How did Costa get in here?
With that door. The same one we just used now. Only he couldn't have used it while the wind tunnel was in action.
The door locks?
Automatically, once power is on. That's what I don't understand.
What?
How it started. It can only be turned on from outside. Ben must have been in here working on the model. Then something went haywire with the wind tunnel controls. It started up, and there he was, caught in a wind stream of over 250, 300 miles per hour.
You sure the controls went haywire?
What else?
Well, I'll have the controls checked, Mr. Dennis. Maybe they're okay. In which case...
What are you getting at?
Murder? All anybody has to do is push that button. The controls were checked. They worked perfectly. At 10:30, the medical examiner reported on cause of death. Body battered by sledgehammer wind inside the tunnel. I went through the dead man's clothes, checked the possessions. I found a remnant of a typewritten letter. A few words. Must have money by Thursday next, or will file for... And that was all. I spent the next half hour questioning personnel at the airfoil.
Me? You're taking me in? What for, Sergeant?
Suspicion of murder, Mr. Dennis.
Oh, you're off your rocker. Why me?
You were the last one to see Costa alive.
Who says so?
Guard on duty last night at the field entrance.
Look, that's nothing. This field isn't well guarded. Sure, there's a fence, but the fence is broken in a dozen places. Anybody could have walked in.
And there's another reason. You said you didn't argue with Costa.
So?
You were heard arguing. Loud voices, threats.
I can explain all that.
You'll get your chance. Dennis was taken in, booked on suspicion of murder. 12:15 p.m., I went over to Costa's apartment, the 800 block Shoreham Street. Furniture was being moved out. I found a woman supervising. Dark hair, good-looking, well-dressed.
Who am I? Helen Costa, that's who I am.
Mrs. Ben Costa?
Not for any longer than I can help. And why shouldn't I take this furniture out? I paid for it, not Ben. He put every penny into that stupid invention. I'm sick of it, you understand? I told him over and over I couldn't go on this way.
You're divorcing him?
I told him that last night.
Last night? Where was this?
Well, it was at the... It was right here, Sergeant, here in this apartment.
Uh-huh. What time was it?
Oh, 6:30.
You certain of that?
No, I'm not certain. I was upset. I told him either he gave me back all the money I had poured into that invention or I'd file for divorce.
You put your own money into it?
Every cent I had.
Mrs. Costa, do you own a typewriter?
A typewriter?
Yeah.
Well, no.
How did you tell your husband? In writing?
In writing? No, I just told him, that's all. I spoke to him.
If you're contemplating divorce, you have a lawyer, haven't you?
Yes.
All right, what's his name?
William Jefferson.
William Jefferson. His address?
250 Court Avenue.
Court.
Excuse me.
Yeah, sure.
Hello. Yes, this is Helen. What? What? Oh, no. No. No, excuse me, I can't talk now. Sergeant, why didn't you tell me?
About your husband?
That's why you're here, isn't it? Why didn't you tell me?
Who did tell you, Mrs. Custer?
That was my lawyer, Bill Jefferson. Dead. And all the while I was having the furniture moved out. All the time.
Nobody can blame you if you didn't know.
Well, yes, but it's so ghoulish. It was Dennis. Dennis, it must have been.
His partner?
Fine partner. He never put any money into it. All he was doing was fastening onto Ben like a leech. He always got paid, even when Ben was starving. Dennis got paid. Is there anything else you want, Sergeant?
Not right now, Mrs. Custer.
I'd better have this furniture moved back. Oh, it's awful. That's what it is. It's just awful.
She was crying. It could have been grief. On the other hand, it could have been guilt. I got one of the neighbors to stay with her. I went over to Court Avenue, called on Attorney Jefferson.
Yes, Sergeant, Mrs. Custer was going to file for divorce. Now, naturally, it's not necessary.
You knew Ben Custer yourself, Mr. Jefferson?
I met him once or twice.
Are you his lawyer?
Well, not recently. Wouldn't have been ethical to handle his wife's divorce and represent him at the same time, but I was representing him until about a month ago.
Why did you stop?
Money, Sergeant. He was delinquent in his bill.
Uh-huh. How much he owe you?
Over $5,000.
Huh?
Most of that was for filing the patent on his invention. I had to do a patent search, draw up the usual legal documents. Very complicated.
You've seen his invention?
Yes, several times.
What do you think of it?
Well, I'm a lawyer, not an aeronautical expert, but I'd say it was worthless. Never got off the ground.
We talked a while longer. I got no further information. I went back to the office, put in a call at the government patent office in Washington. Yeah, that's right. Peters, homicide. We're investigating the murder of a man named Ben Custer. Yeah. I'd like information on a patent filed in his name in the aeronautical field. Uh-huh. Well, the other name on it may be Harry Dennis. Yeah. Well, get back to me as soon as you can, will you? Thanks. P.M. Got the information from the patent office. Only two names on the patent. Ben Custer, Harry Dennis. I held further conversation with Dennis in my office.
Now you know you can't hold me. I didn't have anything to do with it.
What happens to that invention with Custer dead?
The invention isn't any good. It's worthless.
Well, as surviving partner, do you get it?
Look, that happens to be my business.
How much money was invested in that invention?
All told?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I should say $60,000, $70,000.
What was your share?
That's my business, too.
You ever see this?
Must have money by Thursday next, or we'll file for... Where's the list of them?
That's all.
It's not familiar to me. Whose is it?
We found it in the wind tunnel.
Must have been Ben's. I don't get it. What money?
I thought you might know. Did Costa borrow any money?
Not that I know of. He had some, I had some, and his wife... Say, this could be about a divorce. She was pretty mad about Ben using up all her money.
That's all you can tell me?
Yes, except that you've got no right to keep me here. I talked to my lawyer. He says you can't...
We can. For 24 hours. Now, one more question.
You can ask. I may not answer.
Who was Costa's lawyer for the past month?
Bill Jefferson.
Jefferson says no.
Oh, that's right. Sure. A man named Hazel. John Hazel.
I thanked Dennis, then checked the phone book for Hazelton. Lawyer. The address, 2850 Mandrake. I went over there at once. Excuse me, miss.
Yes. Oh, yes, Sergeant.
I'd like to see Mr. Hazelton.
Well, he's very busy right now. Doesn't want to be disturbed, but if it's important...
It could be.
What's it about?
Murder.
Oh.
That got her. She disappeared at once. While I waited, I checked the typewriter. I found a sample in the waste basket. Put it in my pocket. 5 minutes later, I was talking to Hazelton.
Yes, I heard about it. Terrible tragedy, terrible. Anything I can do at all, just call on me, Sergeant.
I am.
Not that I can give you much help. I've only known Coster a month.
And Dennis?
Same. Not very well in either case.
This invention, were affairs in a tangle?
Tangle? Sergeant, you've heard of the Gordian knot.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, this was worse. Well, just 2 days ago, I learned that Coster had borrowed $20,000 and was being threatened with a lawsuit.
$20,000?
Well, that's the figure he gave me.
Who did he borrow it from?
I don't know.
You're his lawyer and you don't know?
Well, I know that sounds odd, but it's not really. You see, he told me that on the phone 2 days ago, very much upset. Said he'd drop in and discuss it with me.
Mm-hmm. Well?
He died before he could. So all I know is there's someone around whom Coster owed $20,000. And there's one other point.
About the debt?
Yes, I shouldn't violate a client's confidence, but since Coster is dead, he kited the figure, Sergeant.
Kited the figure?
Well, that's what he told me. The original note was for $2,000.
He changed it to $20,000?
Yes.
That's criminal offense?
Yes, so I told him. He said he was desperate for money. He said his invention was close to becoming practical. He'd been testing out the bugs. He had blueprints of an improved model.
An improved model?
Well, that's what he said. Of course, I have no way of knowing whether that was true or not.
Where did Coster have his office?
Office?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the only office he had, as far as I know, was out at the airport.
I asked some further questions, but that was all he knew. I went back to the office, gave the lab the original typewritten sentence, gave them the sample from Hazelton's office, and I arranged for searches for other samples. From the other lawyer, Jefferson, from Dennis, from Mrs. Coster. She had denied having a typewriter, but in a murder case, a lot of people deny a lot of things. At 6 p.m., Dennis was sprung by his lawyer. Okay, Mr. Dennis, you're out on bail. Just don't leave town.
I have no intention of leaving town.
Any more thoughts?
About Ben?
Yeah.
I don't know why I should help you out.
Me, Mr. Dennis? Yourself, you're the suspect.
But I tell you... Okay. I guess you were just doing your job. Okay. Ben and I did have a quarrel.
Last night?
Yes, every day for the past week. Sergeant, did you know what that darn fool had done?
I'm listening.
He stole $18,000.
18?
He had taken a personal loan for $2,000. He hiked the value to $20,000. He told me all about it. He was worried sick. The lender had threatened criminal action.
You were involved?
I'm his partner. In a partnership, each is responsible.
Who gave him the loan, Dennis?
I don't know.
Your own partner and you don't know?
I told you no.
Well, if it was a personal loan...
Personal? It wasn't. He forged my name to it, too. Now, if there's nothing else...
Yeah, there is one more thing.
Yeah?
I hear that invention was close to success.
What? Where'd you hear that?
Is that true?
Don't you think I'd know if it was? It's not true, Sergeant. It can't be true. Unless...
Yeah.
Ben worked there a lot, alone.
Without you?
Yeah. Many nights I knocked off at 5 or 6. He kept going. I never thought of that. A man who would alter a check and forge another signature, he might be completely unscrupulous.
Would that flying platform be worth anything?
Worth anything? Sergeant, if it worked, it would be worth millions. Millions!
The newspapers carried it in the late editions. Inventor murdered, on brink of great triumph. I checked the lab at 8:30. I was still working on the typewriter search. And then a call came in at 9 p.m. Peters, homicide. Right. How long ago? Check. Call was from plainclothesman Walker. He had Mrs. Coster under surveillance. She had gone to Jarvis Airport. I went out there, walked across the airport, till I came to the hangar that housed the wind tunnel. I entered through the big steel door. I could just feel that echo. And just then, the door beside me opened. I saw it was a man. I didn't recognize him. But a flashlight went on across the hangar from me. And then there were two figures. A man and a woman. I started to tiptoe across. Mrs. Costa! Mrs. Costa! There was nothing. There was no answer. And then something came flying through the air. And it hit the hangar wall instead of me.
Now look, you're wasting your time. There's been one murder already. You can't get away with another. Mrs. Costa! Mrs. Costa!
And then I heard it. I couldn't tell where it was. Hangar had echoes. Might have come from any direction. But somebody was dragging her. And I listened. And there was a door somewhere. Not an outside door. It sounded different. And then the same door again, closing. What other door was there? Front door on the hangar? The back door? What other? Another sound. And I listened. It was a hum. It started low. It seemed to vibrate through the hangar. The wind tunnel. And then I used the flashlight. Wide open this time. Narrow beam, but strong. And I ran toward the wind tunnel. And beside the door leading into it, I saw the starting button. Just as I got there...
Oh. Hey, one side! Drop that leg! Look, you fool, whoever you are!
You'll never know. Yeah.
He was big. He was bigger than I was, and he was frightened. He was desperate. He was tough to handle. But I finally handled him. My head was swimming. All I had was a match. First one went out, but the second one held. And I found the switch, and I cut it off. And I went into the wind tunnel. And that was like stepping into a hurricane. Wind sucked at me, and I fought it. Mrs. Custer! Mrs. Costa!
Help!
All right, take it easy. Just keep talking. Keep talking.
Help me! Help!
All right, okay, easy.
Get me out!
All right, easy now, easy.
The wind, the wind!
I know.
Get me out!
Look, now, stop it, stop it! Take it easy.
He took me
now, listen, it's dying down now. It's all right, Mrs. Costa.
I'll help you out of the wind tunnel. Clothes were torn. She certainly needed another permanent. I found the hangar lights, switched them on. I sat her down, slipped handcuffs on the man I had knocked out. Okay, Mrs. Custer. It's William Jefferson, huh?
Yes.
He killed your husband?
Yes. He came here last night. Ben owed him money. A lot of money.
$20,000?
You knew about that?
Yeah, we knew. Another couple of hours, we'll have the proof.
Will was... Well, he was angry at Ben. Very angry.
Only because of the money?
Well, yes.
Nothing else, huh?
No, of course not. What else could there be?
She's lying, Sergeant. Why are you lying, Helen?
To your conscience, Jefferson, huh?
She came to me for a divorce. We were going to get married, Helen and me. That's funny.
Funny?
I'm a lawyer. I didn't want to wait for a divorce. I figured it'd be easier with Ben out of the way. An accident.
Accident?
Okay. No accident. I came here late last night. I sneaked through a break in the fence. I put him in the wind tunnel.
And you did the same to me.
I cut it out, you... Mrs. Custer.
You know why he wanted to kill me, too, don't you? Don't you, Sergeant?
Yeah, I can guess.
You don't have to guess, Sergeant. I got panicky, that's why. Helen knew what I'd done. I told her. Then I got panicky. She was the only witness. I told her to meet me here. I picked up that story in the newspapers as an excuse. But Coster had blueprints around. A new flying platform, a successful one worth millions.
You tried to kill me.
Yes, I didn't want to, but I had to. I had to keep your mouth shut. No, Sergeant, these handcuffs.
What about them?
Well, you... don't need them now. I'm finished. I know that. Can't you take them off?
Sure. When you're sitting pretty behind bars. Name?
William Jefferson.
Address?
1304 Elmwood Place.
Charge? Murder. Remarks. Mrs. Costa turned state's evidence. The laboratory found the piece of letter had been typed on Jefferson's machine. Jefferson, indicted and tried, found guilty. Executed for murder, first degree. Signed, Sergeant Brad Peters, homicide.
You have just heard Police Blotter, starring Bill Zuckert as Sergeant Brad Peters. The cast included Joseph Bolin, Elaine Rost, and Carl Frank. Tonight's drama, Homicide by Hurricane, was written by Sheldon Stark and directed by William Marshall.
Police Blotter has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
An episode of Police Blotter, Homicide by Hurricane, broadcast from 1956, which probably first aired on Mutual, re-aired for our troops overseas through the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. With the distinctive extended bed of instrumental music at the end of the program, that was typical of many Armed Forces transcriptions, that or public service announcements, both used to fill time, which was taken up on the network by commercials, which Armed Forces Radio did not air in their rebroadcasts. And with that, we come to the end of this hour of Old Time Radio. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. It's been a pleasure. Please join me again when you can for more classic sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.